I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 and welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. Welcome to the show. My name's Michael Veazey, I'm your host, and today we have a fantastic interview. I was recovering from Greg Mercer's interview with us, which is full of fantastic things. Greg's quite a sort of laid-back approach, but very, very successful. Will Turnland is like plugging into mains electricity, also phenomenally successful seller. He's sold $10 million worth of products over 3 years and has about 2,000 products live, which are just crazy numbers. Will thinks fast, talks fast. He's just got such a razor-sharp brain. But actually, when it boils down to it, in a different take, and this is what's fascinating me, he's got a very simple, clear grasp of what he perceives as the basics. And that's just fascinating and also immensely practical and helpful. So, guys, listen closely, take notes, read the show notes. Here is the whirlwind that is Will Turnland. Hi there, ladies and gentlemen. I am delighted to welcome a master of Amazon bestriding the place like a colossus, and that is Will Turnland. Will, welcome to the interview.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Will, I know you're a massive seller on Amazon. How did you get into the whole thing in the first place, Amazon and private label selling on Amazon?
Well, a couple different things. First and foremost, my brother, who is 6 years older than me, he started selling on eBay around like 2003. He was ordering from Alibaba and selling on eBay. At the time, I was 13 years old. And so back then, I'm just asking a million questions, probably being the annoying little brother. From there, it kind of got the wheels turning to where when I was 16, I started kind of doing different forms of retail arbitrage, stealing my dad's credit card and then selling the stuff on eBay. So I started a while ago, but I started actually selling full time on Amazon about 3 years ago.
Right. 3 years ago. And what have you done in that sort of what time? Where have you got to with your business now, if you don't mind saying some numbers? Or
yeah, sold over way over $10 million in the last 3 years, growing more and more. I've now kind of turned it so the part of the business where I have to be there, I've kind of managed that out and outsourced it. And so now I spend a lot of my time traveling, running my business just for my laptop.
Amazing. So the laptop lifestyle is a reality for you then?
Yes.
Interesting, because some of the big sellers and the big movers in the Amazon world just interviewed Greg Mercer for the podcast, and he's doing exactly the same thing. He's over in Barcelona right at the moment. So,
yep, I was with him actually like last week.
Excellent. And was that in Canton, in the Canton Fair?
Yeah, we were both speaking at the same event, the Global Sources Show in Hong Kong.
Of course, yeah, we had Peter Zapp from the Global Sources Show on the podcast as well. So anyone who was over there, we'll have to ask you about that later. But first of all, obviously $10 million in 3 years is just a phenomenal result. So the big question is, how did you do that?
Combination of everything. I do some wholesaling from US brands, some wholesaling from Canadian brands. I do some private labeling and kind of just, I just go where the cash is at. So if I see that there is a kind of risk-free dollar I can put out there to return, say, $1.20 back in a couple months, I'll invest my money that way and just keep growing the business, investing everything back into the business to kind of get it as big as possible.
That's very, very interesting. So a couple of questions then. First of all, when you say you'll just go where the cash is at, that makes a lot of sense, but how do you work that out?
Well, it's the kind of, I'll give you two paths of like the way you hear people say it and the way I would do it.
Right.
So the way you hear people say it is they sit there, they do a bunch of research for a month or two. They finally order a sample, test out the sample. Then they will brand it, get a bunch of logos made, spend a bunch of money, finally get the nice packaging, the nice product in, say 5 months after they started, and then send 2,000 units into Amazon, give away a few hundred units and kind of just go through that process. And that's the normal way someone might do it.
Yeah.
Where I might just call up some US-based brand that has a bunch of products on Amazon. They all have 100 plus reviews, but none of them are Prime. And I'll call them up and say, hey, do you mind if I source your products? I'd love to sell them online. My name is Will Turnland. I do a lot on Amazon. And your account is not properly being run because most of your products are not being Prime and most of your customers are having to pay for shipping. I'd love to give your customers free shipping. Can I source from you? And then they'll say, yeah, sure. And then I'll order $5,000 worth of product, and I can see through a software or like Jungle Scout, like Greg's software, that hey, this they sell $50,000 between all their different products underneath their brand a month. I can just buy $5,000 worth to test it out, flip it for $7,500 in maybe a week and a half's time, and right there I'm making $2,500 in 10-day span while the person A is still doing their first 10 days of research. And so I'm just flipping money and trying to just make cash as fast as possible while other people may be trying to build a brand and maybe do something a little bit more long term.
So tell us about, I mean, many, many, many things that come out of that for me. But the main thing is this whole debate of building a brand versus just finding a product that's an opportunity and leaping on it, which Greg was talking about. He said that he tried to, you know, himself build a brand and then have found that that actually wasn't really working for him on Amazon. And he just goes off to, you know, individual product opportunities or keyword opportunities. So is that still your approach, or are you about a bigger brand now?
Well, building a brand is always kind of the sexier thing, but the way then I would do that is say that wholesale company that I was talking about, that I'm wholesaling their products. I noticed that of 10 of their SKUs of their 100 sell like crazy. Well, if the competition's not that high for those keywords, then I'll go and private label a version of that same exact product. And so then right there, I give the customer the illusion of choice where they can go, I can buy the name brand product, or I can buy the slightly cheaper private label kind of like no name brand, but at the same time, they're buying from me regardless. And so if I find that it's easy for that wholesale product rank for these kind of low competition keywords, then I'll go and private label product in the same niche.
Okay, so basic sort of a micro niche, but then you want to start to dominate that micro niche, like, you know, a niche created by a keyword, like, I don't know what, silicon spatula is the classic one, or whatever, garlic press. But
yeah, I would never go near those products.
No,
I'm always trying to be the tallest kindergartner.
Okay.
Where, yeah, I don't need to, if I just can take over all the listings on one page, it's very, very valuable. So that's why a lot of times I will, instead of doing a large variation parent-child listing, I'll make all the different listings individual, because I know for that keyword then I can have all 10 listings on that first page.
Okay, so parent-child cuts down the number of places you rank in response to a keyword. So you just don't bother with that most of the time, is that right?
Yeah, parent-child makes all the sense in the world if you're going after a competitive keyword, because you're trying to drive all your sales to one listing. But when I'm going after kind of these low competitive, low competition keywords, I might as well just cover the first page and then make sure the customer has no choice but to buy from me.
Wow. And so presumably that takes quite a bit of cash up front, or to capital to invest to do that sort of thing.
Well, that's what I was saying. I just did it with a brand recently where I see that a brand sells $50,000 a month.
Yeah.
But my first order was still only $5,000 to make $7,500.
Okay.
You know, well, not to make $7,500, but to return $7,500.
Yeah.
And so then that $7,500, you reinvest it, and then that gives you $11,000 back in your checking account. You reinvest $11,000 until you get up to that $50,000 mark.
Okay. So it's basically find something that sells and then turn that cash around as quick as you can.
Exactly. So instead of trying to, does that make a lot more sense? So you just go after their most hottest sellers, because you know that when you're buying one brand we just bought from recently, most of their products average around $125. And they have all the different, they've bought 200 SKUs. Well, I just ordered about 50 of their hottest selling products, and I sold those out within like 5 days, so I can reinvest that cash as fast as possible. It's all about turning your cash as fast as possible.
Wow, this is sort of blowing my mind, because it's, as you say, it is quite different from what a lot of people teach and a lot of people do. So let's bring it back down to, so I'm sure that a lot of my listeners, which are at the earlier stages in many cases, are going, wow, this sounds amazing, but how do I do this? So for somebody who's just starting out, how can you sort of combine your get the cash in, get it out as quick as you can approach with being at the beginning stages of things? Is there anything different?
No, not at all. It's just all about, honestly, if they're really just starting out from the very beginning, it's just about faking it till you make it.
Right.
Where you will have to, basically, I've done this with a million different accounts where it's like, I make a free 1 week Shopify store that has a bunch of different products in their niche. And so I can call them up and say, hey, if I'm looking for a bunch of different like shovel brand that's not being represented properly on Amazon, I'll make willsshovelstore.com, put a bunch of this, pictures up there with random prices and whatever, and say, hey, and make an email that goes along with it and say, hey, I'm from Will's Shovel Store. We'd love to sell your products on my website, blah, 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 blah. And when more times than not, if you say, hey, I'm looking to place a $5,000 order right now, If you place a $5,000 order and it's a $5 million a year company, you're 1% of their sales right off the bat, or more than 1% of their sales for the year. So any salesman, you're kind of their dream, because they'll make cold calls all day hoping to make a sale like this. And if you call them out of the blue and you seem like you're from a reputable company and you're paying cash up front, there's really no way they're going to say no.
Basically, you go the same process that a lot of people are doing, but just like super quick. You get your Shopify store up, you get some pictures, you get a price, you get the sense of a business in motion, and then you just go straight in and ask for the, and you know, place the order, done, and then on to the next, presumably.
Well, yeah, and then more time, and then you just, there's so much just BS you cut through then, because then you get the products in.
Yeah.
They already have a UPC code and all the pictures and listings created, so you just scan them all in. You don't have to label them, you don't have to do anything. You just can accept them in, send them right back out. They're already, the listings made, and then all that kind of stuff that people waste their time doing, you can spend time on the phone creating new brands. And so if I call up this brand and spend 2 hours on the phone with them, and then I end up making $40,000 over the year profit off that brand, I'm making $20,000 an hour. And so I'm not I'm not wasting my time with all the kind of nitty gritty stuff that other people are doing, where they go, well, Will, you're not building a brand for the future. And it's like, well, I'm the one kind of collecting cash and making money while you're kind of sitting there spending 2 months to make a logo.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I have to say that does mirror my own experience when I first started out. I was following a course, and, you know, very well known course. And yeah, it did take about 5-6 months to go from starting the training to actually getting a product on its way to Amazon, which is, you know, pretty scary, because in that time, obviously, the competition kind of goes crazy. But
the competition goes crazy.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's going to sell out.
Yeah.
You don't, it's all risk, very little reward.
Yeah.
Where with me, it's like I just take little risk and get the same reward over and over again, where it's like I just compound that 20% interest, say, 6 times a year, opposed to trying to get this huge kind of like home run product that's going to make me $1 million a year off one product. A common thing I say is it's a lot easier to sell 1,000 products once a day than one product 1,000 times a day.
Yeah, I guess the downside of that is having a lot of money tied up in inventory.
But that's why you, again, that's why I was saying you order a week's worth of inventory.
Right.
Because a lot of these US brands, if you're in the US, they'll have a lead time of like 3 to 10 days.
Yeah. Okay. So you just order a week's worth. Wow. So there's a really very different business model from what everyone's teaching, really, by the sound of it.
Yeah, everyone kind of teaches the same thing. It's hard to teach Amazon in general, because every business is different. Everyone has different cash flow. Everyone has different education. Everyone has different kind of responsibilities in life. And it's hard to kind of write one course that covers every single person's situation. And so these courses, they do the best job they can to kind of give one route that everyone can follow.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, one size does not fit all, which is why I'm increasingly, if I'm helping people with sort of beginning training, I'm trying to, you know, for people who are serious about it, offer mentoring, because you can tailor things to people's individual situations. So that makes total sense. So are you basically saying that you were do wholesale first and then private label afterwards? Or how does that relate between the two things?
Yeah, you just, more times than not, it just like just super, super obvious, where it's like, wow, I buy this product for $40 and the US retailer wants me to sell it for $150. Well, if there's that much margin and they're making money selling it to me for $40, this thing must cost like $10, $15. I'll look it up on Alibaba. My suspicions will be confirmed. And then I'll go, okay, this is worth private labeling. I don't have to order a huge amount, but that's usually the biggest risk I take. But since I've already proven it on the wholesale market and proven that there's demand, when I can offer the product for half the price, more times than not, the customers want kind of the generic half price product just as much as they want the name brand version.
Great. So if I can just feed back to you, just check that I'm getting this all on here. It's like Danny warned me that you sort of machine gun out amazing information, and he is not wrong. It's incredible stuff. But to get my head around it, basically you wholesale first. If you see there's a massive margin between what you think they are selling it for and what they're probably sourcing it for on Alibaba, you go there and double check that. If that is the case, you private label it. And then the cost difference, the price difference is what sells it rather than the brand. Is that a good summary?
Yes, 100%.
Great, fantastic. Now, so coming back to sort of more sort of earthbound I don't know, somebody who's just sitting there wanting to get started, what product choosing advice do you have then for somebody who's just getting started on their first product? Should they go straight to wholesalers and forget about Alibaba to start with?
No, Alibaba can be great. there's plenty of niches out there. I consult with people all the time who are finding great new products. My advice is to just go after the lower competition products. If you're making, say, $10 a unit off a product and you're selling 10 a day, that's amazing. That product is making you $36,000 a year. That's a great product, and you can just keep sourcing that one and then move on to the next product. I'd love to have a bunch of 10 different products that are private label that are selling 10 a day, opposed to going after one of these more competitive niches. It's just so much easier. The competition's not nipping at your ankles all the time, and it's a little bit longer term than trying to go after the something that's ranked in the top 1,000 BSR or something that's selling, say, $50,000 a month, just one listing kind of thing. Those are the products that kind of scare me, because those products, more times than not, have someone sourcing it who have a lot of money, where they can afford to kind of sell them at a loss just to keep competition away.
Okay, so normally that's a sign then, if you've got a really high selling item at a moderate price, that actually that's not profitable at all for the person who's selling it, you know, and there's some money behind it.
I like it when if you're looking at private labeling, I like it when there's, like, say, one listing that has, say, like 300, 400 reviews, and then there's a bunch of listings underneath that have, like, say, like 20 to 40 reviews. Because you look at that and you go, okay, well, through a few giveaways and stuff, I can get 40 reviews fairly quickly. So I'm competing there for the second place spot in a fairly kind of, not that competitive niche, but a niche that has demand, because there's that one listing that has 300 reviews. And so the 300 review listing shows that there's demand, but then the rest of the listings show that the competition's not too bad. And so that's kind of the perfect little sweet spot.
Great. So you're actually consciously going after second place in that case?
Eventually I can compete with that first place one, because the second listing down can sell just as much as that first listing. Just because it has that many reviews doesn't really mean that it's a top selling one. It just means that it might have just been there first.
Okay. So you're basically looking for a sort of proof of demand and then some space underneath for you to kind of slot in, because you can easily get 20 to 40 reviews.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Okay, very interesting. Now, what are the biggest problems you faced starting out and how did you solve them? But maybe you started out from a very different place from the many of the people we're starting off with, because they didn't have a brother who'd been in it and they hadn't been sort of making money off their father's credit card at 16. And, you know, it's like a young business genius. So maybe the better question is, what are the big mistakes or problems you see people who's launching out? What are the big mistakes they tend to make?
Well, I don't know if I'd consider this a mistake, but one of the biggest problems I see is just people not getting started in the first place.
Right.
They will sit there and do research, and they'll get stuck in this analysis paralysis where they never pull the trigger, and they just constantly feel like they're working on the business without kind of getting anything done and actually making any cash. But once people actually get started, the main thing they just don't fully think it out is their cash flow. They will sit there and order. They'll have $5,000 to invest, and their first order will be $5,000. Mm-hmm. And if their lead time is, say, 30, 45 days, and the product actually does start taking off, they don't have enough cash to reinvest, and they get out of stock for a couple months.
Yep.
And so that's one of their biggest problems, is actually selling too much too quickly, no lie.
Selling too much too quickly is a problem.
Yeah, well, when you weren't thinking your cash through properly.
So what would you do instead then? What's the solution?
The solution is, as much liquid cash as you have, only order half as much as that. An example I can give is when my brother and I ordered a container of knee scooters. We ordered their knee scooters for when you injure your foot. I don't know if you've ever seen those before.
I haven't, but, I'm afraid.
Anyone can look it up. It's pretty, they're all over Amazon now. But a container fit 210 units. And it took 60 days from us ordering to getting it in stock at Amazon, because they were coming from China. Well, we sold like 7 knee scooters the first day. And so if you multiply 7 times 60, it's 420. So after the first day of sales, after only selling 7, we had to spend another $40,000 ordering another container, even though we had only sold 7 from the first $40,000 container.
Right. Okay.
And so that's the kind of thing that someone might spend their full $40,000, and then they have to wait for 3/4 of their container to run out before they can order again. And at that point, they're going to be out of stock for 2 months. And that's the worst thing ever.
You're totally right. And actually, I have to say, I've been guilty of falling into that exact trap myself. But, I mean, I suppose you, because sales seems like such a great thing to have, you sort of lose track of the cash flow thing until suddenly, as you say, exactly, that you need to wait to sell out to get the cash back out in order to then go and place in the order. Meantime, you're out of stock for 3 months, the competition's going, and Amazon hates you. And yeah, it's a grim business.
Well, yeah, and that's just kind of number one thing that people never think about when they're sitting there growing their business. They go, oh, I sold 20 units the first day. It's like, ooh, you better start doing some multiplication real quick, because this might actually be not a blessing. If you have like family, friends, and like can take out loans, this is like the number one time to take out a loan. More times than not, I would tell people never to kind of get in debt to build their Amazon business. But if you've proven demand and you need to get it back in stock, that's one of the few times I would say to take outside money.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I've been reluctantly come to the same conclusion myself, because I was thinking that, you know what, I know this sells, and is that gap really between the sales and that order coming through and getting restocked? It's essentially a cash flow problem, not a profit and loss thing, which it strikes me really strongly sometimes in this business. Obviously, you are a bit more business savvy and saw that coming in the first place. So
I've been talking to a lot of private equity firms who are looking for Amazon businesses to lend to, because they know that it's just the easiest money to lend to, because more times than not, the profits are proven.
Right. Okay. So they love the fact that you've got proven business model, making cash already, making profit.
Yeah, it's when this world of people investing billions of dollars in these startups that make no money, these Amazon businesses are pretty enticing for some banks.
Yep, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, I have to say. So what are the other big mistakes you see people doing when they're launching their business? So ignoring cash flow, not getting started, what are the other things?
Just sourcing, that's not thinking through the basic two rules that I have that are, first and foremost, how are you going to get on the first page? And then second, once you're on the first page, how are you going to stand out? How are you going to make the customer buy yours over everyone else's? A lot of times I do it via price. But if I can ask, more times than not, when someone says, hey, my product's not selling, I can say, are you on the first page? Well, no. And then if they are on the first page, are you just selling the same meat claw as everyone else, the same black spatula as everyone else?
Yeah.
Well, then you're not going to really stand out and no one's going to buy yours. But if they can't answer those two questions, then they really shouldn't move forward with that product.
Makes total sense. So the differentiation thing, which obviously the more competitive Amazon gets, the more important that is. So what are your other tips on differentiation or standing out?
Besides price, like size, if everyone's selling a 10-inch frying pan or whatever, you can sell a 6-inch one or a 12-inch one in that kind of style.
Yeah.
Or like a copper one, or you can do it via color. If everyone's selling a black dog leash and you just have the only bright pink one,
yeah,
you might not get that many sales. But when someone's quickly scrolling through their phone shopping on Amazon, that might stand out and they might click buy now. Something I do sometimes is stand over my mother's shoulder as she shops on Amazon, because she doesn't know about all the different reviews. She doesn't mind if there's only 3 out of 5 bullet points. You know, she's not stuck in this kind of Amazon bubble. And so when she's scrolling through, she thinks about 2 seconds before she hits the like one click checkout button. She's not sitting there reading through the description or anything like that. And so it kind of, looking at her shopping style, kind of shows to me that like you need to stand out quickly via price, via color, via size, something visual, because people aren't going to read the nitty gritty details.
Great. So something visual and something different, even if the demand is lower, because you'll get the sale, as opposed to you're getting shown a lot of the time for, say, black or generic something, but you won't actually get the sale.
Exactly.
Okay. Very interesting. Okay. What other big mistakes do people make?
Well, that's basically it. It's that people, more times than not, everyone I talk to is they don't have enough cash, or they try to sell a product that they can't rank for. Besides those two things, there's no real other problems to have besides like maybe having a Chinese supplier rip you off. But more times than not, that literally, I never get the email of, hey, my Chinese supplier ripped me off, what should I do? That's the one of the fewest things I ever get. More times than not, it's, hey, I sourced this super, super competitive product. I have 5,000 of them now. I can't sell any. What should I do now?
Yeah.
And then it's sell them as a lot for 5,000 on eBay and just try to get your money back.
Okay. So you think if you recognize that you've gone into an over-competitive market, just get out as quick as you can.
Yeah, there's not really much else you can do. You can give away 2,000 of them, try to spike your ranking, and then try to make your money back on the back end. But there's really, you kind of just messed up in the first place. You should have started a little bit smaller or tested your demand some other way.
Okay. makes a lot of sense. So really, you're having the courage. I'm getting the vibe. I mean, obviously, you have huge experience and many successes behind you, but you seem so confident in making just really quick decisions and getting stuff done. And if it doesn't work, just turning back on that and moving to the other one. Is that the right approach?
Yeah, I'm kind of still young, dumb, and stupid, where I've noticed that a lot of people who are really smart trying to get into the Amazon thing really tend to overcomplicate things.
Right.
And they really tend to kind of try to look into the details and go, no, but what if I do this software with this and I do this technique? And it's like, all you want to do is sell a good product at a good price. You don't need to really, it's not rocket science, and then kind of move on to the next one. Again, it really, my biggest thing to differentiate yourself as an Amazon seller is to product selection and cash flow management. Everything else is kind of everyone else can do. Everyone else can write a good listing. Everyone else can get a good picture. Everyone else can get fancy packaging. What can you do that's different?
Wow. So product selection, cash flow management, that's it. Interesting. It's like hiding in plain sight, isn't it, really? But I like it.
It's one of those things, yeah, where I, no offense, but listen to like zero Amazon podcasts and I read zero Amazon articles or blog posts because I'm afraid of getting stuck in the same bubble as everyone else. And instead, I just read general business books and apply general business models to the Amazon model, and it turns out pretty decent.
Wow, I like that. Turns out pretty decent. I would take $10 million in 3 years as more than pretty decent myself. So the understated wisdom there of Will Tjernlund, and more of that to come in the second part of the interview. I thought I'd break it up into bite-sized chunks. So 30 minutes is an ideal run or a commute to work or whatever. So if you want to hear the next part, it will be coming out in a few days' time as episode 45. This is episode 44. I've taken very many detailed notes, as you would imagine. Who wouldn't? And they are at the blog for you. So www.amazingfba.com/44.
Hey, this is Johnny Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Many thanks to John Lee Dumas there of Entrepreneur on Fire, which is certainly one of the most successful business podcasts out there. And that was my reward for leaving him an iTunes review. So my reward to you, if you want to leave an iTunes review and you haven't done so yet, is that I will do a free email consultation with you, which is normally now reserved to my mentees. If you want to get free advice, guys, pop over to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FB. But if you want a one-on-one consultation via email, then I can only really deal with one email, but I can do it in depth for you in return for an iTunes review. Now, iTunes is not easy to leave reviews on. For some reason, Apple doesn't make it easy, but I have done that for you. So if you go to the blog, www.amazingfba.com/iTunes review, or just look on the menu bar for a link to the page, leave an iTunes review. It will talk you through how to do that. So once you've done that, if you want to claim your email consultation, just take a screenshot of the page where you've left your review. It can take up to 24 hours to be reviewed and approved by Amazon. And then just send me an email with that screenshot and your question, and I will help you with your business. So I hope you're recovering from the mind-blowing information that you're getting from Will Tjernlund. I think it really is, as he said, it's very different from a lot of the information out there. In a way, it's much more sophisticated business thinking because he's been around the block. Even though he's only 24, 25, then he's actually been at business since, you know, the early years, and also had huge experience on Amazon. But what's nice is that he keeps it pretty simple. So cash flow management and picking the right product seem to be what it boils down to for Will, and it's certainly worked for him. So please go read the show notes, guys, if you've got any seriousness about your business at all, because you really, really need to absorb the lessons from these big guys. I certainly will be going back over the notes from Will and from Greg and Peter Zapf and these guys, and Danny McMillan's notes on the Amazon ads as well. So these people know their stuff, and it's really important that we absorb as much as we can from these guys. So there's no point in reinventing the wheel or making unnecessary mistakes. Equally, what strikes me about all these guys is they're action takers. I know a couple of them personally quite well, and the others I'm getting to know partly through these interviews, and they are all action takers, and they have a confidence that if they don't make it with a particular product, they can sell out at a sort of moderate loss get the money back out of the system and start again. So they're not worried excessively all the time, looking over their shoulder, worrying about a product that clearly isn't working. They're getting on with what does work. And that is a mentality that I would really urge you to develop as soon as you can. It's not a question of blind faith. It's a question of overall confidence, going into something knowing that you can sell out, and then get on with it, really. See if something sells. If not, then move on to the next thing. So learn, do, review. It's always the same. Learn from these big sellers so that you don't reinvent the wheel. Do stuff yourself, see if it works, and then review. See if you can tweak things that aren't working, or if you've made a blindingly obviously bad decision, like you've chosen a product which has got the most competition on the earth, then get out quick and then move on to something else. So sounds like amazing advice to me. Look forward to speaking to you in the next podcast. Get out there, good hunting, good Amazoning, and speak to you in the next show.